It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
For the right advice at the right time, it's Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studios with us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, I think we're going to rewrap and go back to the topic of homeowner associations, planned urban developments, things of this nature. you know, Ben, we live now in a real estate environment where so many of our homes are either in subdivisions that have associations, restrictive covenants, and or, you know, no lot line,
right?
Planned developments, condominiums, townhomes,
the patio home,
the
style.
Patio home. This really is the new mode of living for so many of our listeners, and so we want to talk about some of the kind of demystify, if you will, the way that these things operate. And they vary, by the way, as we'll discuss, greatly from, you know, from development to development.
Almost always when we do these, people do have questions. And so if you would like to call in, don't be shy, 800-818-2255 or reach Kinsey at the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Because, Wes, you know, these associations and the rules are kind of confusing for a lot of people.
Well, they are. And, you know, in a lot of these subdivisions, you know, we have multiple owners and you know, maybe 100 or more properties. So we're managed by ourselves in many situations because, you know, these homeowners associations, they're set up as a nonprofit corporation under a specific statute, 55A in North Carolina. It's kind of where everything starts. And then there's other governing documents that we've talked about before, such as, you know, your bylaws with your typical corporation. That's usually part of your homeowners association. And most importantly, you have your declarations or your covenants. And what those are basically are the restrictions on your rights on your property. You know, folks typically don't like to have too many restrictions on what they paid a lot of money for.
They
want to be able to, you know, park their boat, you know, on the trailer in the driveway to clean it up. They want to be able to, if they have somebody in town and they want to park an RV there for a little period of time, they want to be able to do that. They don't want people breathing down their neck about what color they can use to paint their house, what their mailbox looks like.
Basketball,
you know, the list goes on and on and on.
So if those things are important, though, you better choose your neighborhood wisely.
Well, yeah, and that's the other side of it, the yin and the yang. I mean, basically, you know, people typically don't like those restrictions, but obviously you like to live in a nice neighborhood, you know, whatever nice may mean to you. And, you know, how do we create that continuity, that consistency? And we do that, you know, by having – you know, these covenants, you go into a nice subdivision, what the average person thinks nice is. You have a lot of consistency, you know, from the house to the house. You don't have
a minimum square footage.
You don't have an 800 square foot house and then next to it a 6,000 square foot house. You know, you just don't have that. You have more of something that's typical across the board. The houses normally look generally, you know, the same. You might have height restrictions in your covenants. So, you know, the list just goes on and on and on. And then you get to the issue of enforcement and who is doing this and selective enforcement, selective treatment. And you get into the issue of dues and how much the dues are. And,
well, you know, I think you're talking about demystifying, what a lot of people don't understand, Cecil, is that this law allows for a quasi-governmental association that has, they have responsibilities. They also have, they have a lot of power.
Well, there's just no question about that. I often say that, you know, when you buy into a wonderful condominium with those great views that you're looking for, or as we say, a townhome on a golf course, planned urban community, you're buying into a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really are. One vote is one vote. And if you're outvoted, then that's just the way it's going to, roll down the slope. I mean, so you are in a democracy and you have an opportunity to be involved. You can become an officer. You can go on the directors of the subdivision if you would like, the architectural control committees, things of this nature, and participate as best you can. But again, it's going to be a matter of majority.
Mm-hmm.
And folks need to know this moving into, a community. One of the things that Wes and I would say to a client that just calls and says, you know, I'm thinking of buying in this particular community, this particular, no lot line retirement type community. What do you think about that? What should I do? Well, they people already know that they're going to have a title search, but the title search is just going to indicate, you know, that the title,
right?
You know, it would disclose if there are any pending lawsuits, happening in that community. That would also be a public record. But one of the best things that someone like this can do is to, you know, caveat emptor, buyer beware, you know, make some inquiries. I mean, as odd as it sounds, on a Saturday afternoon, hang out in the area and hope that someone walks out their door with their dog.
Yeah.
And you can approach them and say, hey, what's it like living here?
Right.
Is there anything really major going on?
Mm-hmm.
How about the assessments?
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time, you know, the pool was upgraded, or the roads, or the signage, or the outdoor lighting? I mean, tell me a little bit about what it's like living here.
Mm-hmm.
And so
acquiring the minutes.
This is worth its weight in gold, really, Ben, you know, buying into something like this. Yes, there are minutes. Inquiries can be made about that. No question but that you should review the restrictive covenants, as Wes was referring to. I mean, you know, you don't want to be, you know, 35 years old and have two little children out there and not be able to have a basketball goal.
Right.
You know, or
right.
not be able to, you know, pull your boat up maybe for a couple of days to clean it off, your 18 footer, you know, whatever it happens to be.
Those are the kinds of things
that would be in the restrictive covenants.
And Wes, you've handled a lot of cases. These things that trip people up, you know, about that, not being aware of what's exactly written in them.
Right. Cecil brings up some great points. He's kind of coming at this from, you know, the buyer beware before you go write the check or get the loan to buy the property in the particular subdivision. Let's do some due diligence and make sure that we know what we're getting into. Mm-hmm. Now, where I deal with it normally, obviously the person owns the property and we've got an issue, or I represent the homeowners association itself and they have an issue. So, but I would agree with Cecil as it relates to, you know, that due diligence, reviewing the covenants and the amendments to the covenants. You know, that's important. Are we structured right? Meaning, do we really have a working homeowners association?
Right. Are they walking and you're talking like one?
Yeah. Do the neighbors, do they think that everything kind of is working without a problem, or is there some issue politically with regard to the association or how it's being managed? And then, you know, like Cecil mentioned, those big ticket items that we don't want to end up having to have a special assessment for, that may end up hitting us in the pocketbook pretty hard, you know. And he mentioned some of them, things like your swimming pool, if it's not in good shape, the tennis courts, you know, if there is such a thing there, then if they're not in good shape, if the roads look like they need to be repaved, these are all, you know, significant expenses. Other things that come to mind would be, your sewage treatment. If you need to know about that,
right.
I mean, are you connected to, you know, like a Carolina Water type thing where it's a quasi-municipal type sewage treatment, or is an independent sewage treatment that was put in place maybe years ago, and maybe it's 25, 30 years old, and that may not be working
right.
as well as it needs to be, and that could be a huge expense.
It will be a huge expense.
That's right, but you need to know about that. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you have subdivisions that are, you know, connected to municipal sewage and, you know, water as well. Sometimes you have municipal sewage and then you have, you have wells, you have wells. I mean, it just depends on those circumstances. Because, you know, the money that you're putting into it with those dues has to maintain all this stuff, the roads, the pool, the this, the that, the sewage treatment plant. And in many cases, you know, when a subdivision homeowners association has a big expenditure coming up, something like a failed sewage treatment plant, then the covenants allow for that special assessment at that point in time, you know, and that could be you know, somewhat unlimited per owner as it relates to how much everyone has to contribute to fix whatever the problem may be. You know, another area is stormwater. You know, probably in the last 20 years, more than before that, the Division of Water Quality with the state of North Carolina would require certain stormwater management plans put in place and incorporated into the covenants when these associations are established. Well, the stormwater permit issued by the state usually is issued to the developer, and then that has to be transferred over to the association.
Right.
The developer, once he's sold out the lots, he's not going to maintain the stormwater. So before that transfer takes place, then we need to make sure that we're in complete compliance, obviously, with the stormwater permit. Because if we take the permit, then we're taking the obligation of complying with the permit.
Right.
And the state may try to impose some rules, you know, some requirements to be consistent with the stormwater permit. So that's another big ticket item.
Are you capable of taking care of it, or have you made arrangements for contracting it out?
So that's right.
There's a lot of things you got to be able to do.
Yep.
And we talk about walking and talking like an association that, sometimes when people have an issue with it, and the association wants to exercise their powers, I know sometimes that's where you come in and decide whether or not that's appropriate. We'll get to that coming up in a moment here. If you have questions, 800-818-2255, 247-7282-353-4674. Hey, welcome back here to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. And if you would like to call in with a question, you could do so right now.
800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. Give us a call.
We're talking about homeowners associations, and as we were mentioning, homeowners associations are quasi-governmental. They have a lot of power and to enforce fines, lots of other things that can go on. So,
No question about that. Most homeowners associations are going to fall under the Planned Community Act, and that's a particular act that's under North Carolina General Statute 47F. You also have a Condominium Act that's similar under 47C, but these are statutes that give these associations and these boards some particular powers, also limit some power as well. But when you end up in a situation where maybe you have an issue with failure to comply with the covenants, then the question becomes, you know, what can the association do about that? You know, the association, in almost every case, can't come upon your property, for example, and take down your outbuilding you built over the weekend that's not in compliance. They don't have the right to trespass like that, to come take the thing down. But they do have the right, of course, to recognize the problem, to send a letter to you, put you on notice of what the issue is, and then have a hearing with regard to this to allow you to come forward and put on evidence as to why you think that this is okay or why you think it's in compliance. You know, we hear all kind of permutations of this, like, well, I called Joe, who's the head of the Architectural Control Committee, last week. He said it's fine, so I went ahead and did it. You know, I mean, this is real life. I mean, you know, this isn't in a vacuum here. I mean, these associations, these are people, neighbors, so on and so forth. It just happens to be that there's a legal aspect to it, you know, property rights, mm-hmm. using people's money, requiring dues. You know, there's a lot to manage, and we're managing ourselves in many cases. Mm-hmm. It's the property owners managing themselves. So there are oftentimes, you know, come questions with regard to that. So with regard to the outbuilding kind of situation, the mini garage, whatever it may be, that the association thinks is not in compliance with the covenants. Well, as I said, you know, you can't go on the property and take it down. You can put the property owner on notice, and then the association would have the right to fine that property owner up to $100 per day, mm-hmm. In the event is ultimately determined that it is is a violation.
Yeah, if he's out of compliance.
Yeah, but you have to have a hearing first. Yeah.
Due process.
You have to go through due process, and you can't start the fines until 5 days after that determination is made and communicated. So mm-hmm. That whole process has to work in that way. So, I mean, that $100 a day or $50 a day or whatever the association decides with regard to that will continue to run until the person purges themselves of basically what, you know, the contempt, you mm-hmm. know, purge the contempt, which is basically fixing the problem. I think we have a question.
Yeah. I have a question. I live in a neighborhood where my mother actually owns the property that I live in, but we have many, many renters. There's only four homeowners out of probably 40 properties,
right.
And the rest rent. So in a legal situation where you have a problem with a renter, do you then have to track down the owner of that property, or how do you go about that?
Right. So if we're talking about a subdivision, a homeowners association, the party that's responsible for complying with the covenants is the actual property owner. Mm-hmm. So if you have one of your renters, for example, who is in the property and in breach of the covenants for whatever reason, it's your duty as the landlord basically to bring that person into compliance with the covenants. In the event you don't do that, for example, they continue to park their boat on the boat trailer in the mm-hmm. yard, and that's in violation. They just keep it there and say whatever. Well, then the owner of the property stands in a position where they could be fined for mm-hmm. that. So it's kind of a three-part process there. You got the homeowners association, who has authority to oversee what the property owner does, mm-hmm. and the owner has liability with regard to the ownership and liability relative to the covenants. And then the owner or landlord then has an obligation to make sure the tenant mm-hmm. complies. So it's important as well that lease agreement that you have with that tenant, if you have one,
right,
has some language in it, that indicating that you can basically terminate the tenancy in the event you're not in conformance with the covenant. So,
but the person has the issue with that neighbor. I mean, obviously you can speak to the neighbor, or if you know the owner, try and speak to him, get it worked out.
Right.
But if not, then you got to go through the homeowners association. Right.
Right. That's correct. That's mm-hmm. correct. So, you know, the covenants really don't extend, you know, to the tenant. I mean, it's not as though the tenant is bound by those covenants. Mm-hmm. It's the owner. And it really is, you know, restrictions on the use of the property.
Okay. So, yeah. Now, I know you've had some cases, too, where the association itself is just basically defunct. Has not been working.
So absolutely.
We'll come back to that in just a moment here, too, here on Coastal Daybreak and Let's Talk Legal from Harvell & Collins. If you'd like to call and make that appointment with them, 726-9050. They're at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City and online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240 with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins here from Harvell and Collins. We have David on the line with a question for us. Hi, David.
Hey, Ben. Good morning.
Good morning. What's your question for the guys here?
I happen to live in a neighborhood in Jacksonville with an HOA, and unfortunately for us, the president is not following any of the rules. We don't have an annual meeting. There's nothing's being enforced. And it's almost a joke as far as the HOA is concerned. I guess my question is, how do we go about dissolving the HOA? I mean, this has been going on for years. where nothing's been enforced or following any rules or having any kind of meetings or anything.
Okay. All right. Let's get to that.
How many lots do you have out there, David?
There's 80, I believe.
And tell me about the common area. Do you have a common road that you have to maintain, park? What do you have?
We have a small park in the front, and there's a little strip of land that's owned by the HOA. I mean, it's like a ditch bank in between the front section and the back section.
So there's not really much to maintain. Is that right?
No. Our biggest expense is lawn care for the front of the neighborhood and the little park.
All right. So do people pay dues at all?
Yes, we pay dues yearly.
Okay. So basically it's just an association that you don't do anything but pay dues in, and then they just maintain the grass. That sounds like
you don't have a pool or anything.
It sounds like that's what it is.
No pool, no, nothing like that. And I think some of the monies go towards the area lights in the neighborhood.
Right. So as far as enforcement goes, is the subdivision going downhill because of lack of organization? Would you say that? Would you say it doesn't look that
absolutely good?
That type? What's that?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, you know, I would probably consider whether we want to go one way or other. You know, you're talking about dissolving it on one hand. Well, if we dissolve it, then, and I can talk about that in a second, then we're in a situation where we don't have any really way to be organized. On the other hand, you can potentially try to do some things to get it organized, and that may improve the subdivision. So I think that would be the initial analysis. But let me go directly to your question. As far as dissolution, it would be a very difficult thing to do. Because, you know, you have 80 lots there. You have covenants that all these properties are bound by. Even if the covenants are not being complied with, they don't just dissolve over time. The only way to dissolve this legally really would be through a court proceeding, which would be, it'd be expensive, and it would take a lot of time, and it may or may not be successful. Or you have to have 100% approval of all of the property owners to dissolve, which is basically a non-starter, as we know.
Can an individual, though, who's paying dues, call a meeting?
Yes. The law in North Carolina really gives the property owner a lot of ability to enforce the covenants, even though they're otherwise not being enforced. So that would be something that we could do, you know, as well. You could notice up a meeting of the association to discuss these issues. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of different things that can be done. Unfortunately, really any way you go, it would probably be somewhat of a process. There would be multiple steps that would have to be taken to improve this subdivision as a whole. But we see this pretty often, you know, where there's just, it's established. There it is. And it's not being managed whatsoever.
Set it and forget it.
Yeah, but the covenants are there. The covenants are there.
They're there. The covenants are there. Nobody wants to take leadership.
Right.
And that's the problem. And it's just like you mentioned, it's going downhill rapidly, and nothing's being enforced. So, but I'm glad you brought that up about a homeowner being able to call a meeting, because I was not aware of that.
Yep. You would have the right to do it. There's a specific statute on point with regard to that. I would tell you, you probably would need someone to hold your hand a little bit as far as an attorney goes to make sure that, you know, things are done right. But yes, it's certainly a possibility.
Okay. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
If you want to find out more about that, you can give them a call at Harvell & Collins at 252-726-9050, online at harvellandcollins.com, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City.